This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Ronchi, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
Check it out.
St. Louis, Mound City, we are going to have a great day today.
On 104.1 FM.
Let's take it from the top.
KMOX.
We're starting over. We start at 9 o'clock now. That was the show open, yeah. But, you know, we just thought you missed it.
We kept it at 10, so that way we could really throw you off, just in case we go back to a 10 o'clock start. We like to keep you on your toes. They say inconsistency is the key in radio.
Yeah, exactly. Do things at different times.
Yes.
It's the way to develop habits for
inconsistency
people.
Inconsistency is the secret to success.
Chris and Amy, 9 to noon every day. And then at 12 o'clock, the Gas House Gang. We talk sports. So today I will have Matt Pauly and Mike Claiborne with me. We're going to talk a little opening day. We'll talk about the Cardinals' win yesterday. And that's how opening day happened for us. Awesome.
It's pretty good.
We got a win.
Hey,
I was there.
Scott Jagow from the KMOX newsroom is here. He was there.
He was there.
And it started out, you know, with the rain and the cold. I was like, there's no way I'm going to make it to this game. It was awful. But by the time it actually started, and then the game, I mean, Lars' home run and everything just kind of it got going. And you could, you know, as someone who is not from here, people around me, of course, were telling me how important opening day is and historically, and I got it, but it was cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Scott, when you bring that up, I left Cardinals Nation, gosh, what time was it? 1:30 maybe?
About
1:30. And having been in there all morning, I didn't really realize just how bad it was, because you could see out the windows, but I'm like, oh my gosh. So I walk out and it is, like you mentioned, cold. And there are a lot of people that were soaking wet. A couple guys dressed up in Cardinals, like as the bird, like as he would wear a teddy bear costume. They were dressed in a Cardinals costume. They were great. They were dancing around. Probably those suits are going to be musty today, but they were dancing around in the rain. But I thought the same thing you thought. I thought, oh my gosh, I don't think this is going to happen. It's raining and it's cold.
So every meteorologist in town said that it was going to rain, but it wasn't going to wash it out. And I trusted them, and they were correct.
Okay.
They were ended up being correct.
Yeah.
Hey, did it? And I think the sunny skies came from the south, because when I was driving back in the rain, it was sunny. Like, way to the south of the city, it was all sunny. And I'm thinking, why is it raining here still?
I would, by the way, like to take this opportunity. I like to do it once a year and complain about the opening day, next day, day off thing that baseball teams do. And it's common in baseball. It is so stupid. It's so stupid. If they would have opened the season today, 80 degrees, no rain. So I get it. They always say, well, we leave that open day just in case something happens on opening day. Well, do you know how often it happens where there's a rain out on opening day? Very rarely. So just start the season on Friday.
Push back on this one.
Please
have a weekend series.
Tried.
Start it on Friday.
I know. I get that part. But it does sound like, from what I've heard about your day yesterday, you could probably use today off.
Well, certainly. But that's not even why. I say this
voice?
Every year.
He always gets
saying,
a little bit lower.
Opening day is a big party here, especially.
Yeah.
And people get rolling early and they stay up late. And then, I mean, it, you know, I don't know the players, but...
But that's not even why. It's just better to start the season on a weekend. Start it on Friday. You know? People are more likely to take off work on a Friday than they are on a Thursday. I mean, of course, it was sold out, but still, it's easier to take off work on a Friday.
Here, I'm going to throw this out there.
Just do it like this.
How do you guys feel about this? We've pushed back on Ronge over here. He just...
God, and I'm so right. I am 100% right about this.
You can either text us 314-436-7900, or you can leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app on the KMOX page. There's a microphone icon. Leave us a voice message, and we can get to that later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So text us 314-436-7900. Yeah. Leave us a voice message. Should there be the buffer day? We are in the buffer.
This is the buffer
We're
day.
We're currently living
Would
in the buffer
Would have had an 80-degree baseball game today.
Well, but you didn't.
And
what if,
sunny.
What if it had been sunny yesterday?
But it wasn't. My point is that they do it for the rain just in case something happens.
We all know this.
But the just in case almost never happens.
That's like, well, that so, how you so approach just, pandemics and
yesterday
war?
Was pretty close.
Yesterday was pretty close.
Right, so they could have just started the season today.
What if we got rid of our
nuclear
arsenal?
It's a better
arsenal.
Weather day today.
Yeah.
So it very rarely doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying, is that they leave themselves an open day, but it doesn't.
It's never happened. It's a holiday here.
Yeah.
And it's Cincinnati is the same way. The tradition dating back, it's a holiday. They have a parade, and it's just a big deal. So I get it. The Melbourne Cup, to bring up horse racing, which I love to do.
This guy, he's our horse guy.
Yeah. They have a parade for that, too, and it's on a Tuesday. It's, like, bigger than the Kentucky Derby, and it's on a Tuesday. Mm. Speaking of the Kentucky Derby, I brought this up, the strangest things happen at a baseball game when you're sitting next to people you just met.
Okay.
And I talked to this guy, and somehow racing came up, and he said, did you know, I believe that the first Kentucky Derby winner is buried in St. Louis? And I was like,
the
what?
Horse or the jockey?
The horse.
Okay.
Aristides.
Aristides
was his name. He won the first Derby in 1875. And I read an article just this morning because I was curious about this. And there was a reporter from the Louisville paper trying to track down Aristides. Where is he buried? And the legend is that he was sold many different times after the Derby. He ended up in St. Louis. And that the story went that he was buried at Fairgrounds, which is now Fairground Park.
What?
And that used to be the home of the St. Louis Jockey Club and the St. Louis Zoo. Also, people postulated that perhaps he was buried in Bell Fountain Cemetery.
Oh.
And none of this can be corroborated, so it's going to remain a mystery, but it actually is fascinating. There's a place called, what is it, the Oakland Museum? There was an estate here called Oakland, and that's where they thought he was sold for like $50. I mean, the Derby winner from 1875.
Wow.
He died in 1893, and there are still people who think he is buried somewhere
maybe
in North City.
Maybe he's buried next to wherever the Ferris wheel is supposedly buried from the World's Fair.
Well, let me ask you this. If you bury a Kentucky Derby winner in the late 19th century, do you put them in a horse coffin? Do you put them in a bag? Or do they just put them in a hole? And I ask this because are there any remnants or is it dust to dust? Is he gone? Like if we started digging.
Well, the horse has bones.
But bones
would eventually go away, right?
Well, that takes forever.
Yeah, I would think that would take a longer time. But burying a horse is a whole different conversation. It is. I can go into
There's
this.
A process of burying a horse?
It's a big deal.
Okay, we've got time.
I know. It's too hard to explain in one
does it
little
have to be
I would like
deeper?
To know how you bury a horse.
Yeah, can you give us a hint?
It's the space that you need.
Yeah.
Because they're big.
Quite frankly, there's an issue with groundwater contamination concerning horses that have been injected with medications, that kind of thing. There's a lot that goes into it. It's not just dig a hole.
We have to have him on to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. We kept talking about green burials, like my friends and I, for, you know, when we all eventually die. Dust to dust, baby. Anyway, when we do, I want to be very green. It seems Osama bin Laden had the greenest because you're in a burlap bag in the middle of the ocean, which seems like a green way to bury yourself. But at any rate,
I'm not sure you can bury yourself.
And there are forests.
That was not his choice.
It was, though. He made a bad decision.
Pretty sure it wasn't.
the forest in Oregon where you can be buried and then they can grow trees over you because we're running out of space for humans. And I've thought about this and it never once occurred to me, but what about the horses?
Yes, it's a big deal.
Think of all the horses that die. Where do we put them?
Well, they're glue now.
Okay.
Do they still make glue?
You know what? That's there was a line from a newspaper.
Yes.
In 1893 when Aristides died and somebody made a joke. The writer made a joke that he went to the glue factory.
That's where you get
and
quick
dry glue.
This
was in 1893.
Glue. It's fast glue, quick drying glue.
So anyway, these days they cremate a lot of horses.
Yeah.
But we can get into that another time. I did go roaming St. Louis this week.
Okay.
Completely.
This is so interesting, though, Scott. I'm not actually joking. This is really interesting.
So the place I went to was also interesting. It is Jeffrey Seitz, violin maker, over on Loughborough near Carondelet Park. He has, I would say, hundreds, if not thousands, of stringed instruments in his place. And he talks about the process of making a violin. He says, he kind of jokes that the technology for what he does has not changed since 1705. And he's not really wrong because it's still the same as it was in 1705. And he says it takes him 300 to 400 hours to make one violin.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
There are machines that can produce them now, but he does everything by hand. And it's a lost art, I would say, probably. Also, he has collectible items. For example, he showed me a music stand that belonged to KMOX when we had an orchestra. A symphony. Did you know we had a symphony? Matt.
I didn't.
We did.
I know we had a symphony because if you see the first studios, when they would bring in musicians, there's like velvet curtains and tapestry rugs and a grand piano and velvet couches everywhere. And it was incredible. So how big was our symphony?
I don't know.
Was it okay.
Well,
was it bigger than a horse?
Was it bigger than a Clydesdale?
And they have a picture
fit it
of
all in Studio A too.
I have a picture of the stand. It's
How much is it for sale?
It is for sale. I believe he quoted a price of about $300
for the music stand.
Why don't we buy that?
That's
buy
what I'm saying. I think we should buy it and use it this year for the 100th anniversary celebration in some form or fashion.
I was going
to
say
there has to be a way to use it.
We could buy it, put it in here for our live reads. We put that print out. Let me tell you about Windows. I think we should buy it. That's actually not a joke. I love the history of KMOX. I geek out about it. I'm still a fangirl for all of these KMOX hosts like Tom Ackerman and Michael Calhoun and Debbie Monterey. I can't believe I'm here. I think it's a clerical error. I shouldn't be here. We should buy that stand.
Okay. I'm all in.
Have you seen the really old KMOX microphone that is in our boss's office? It's like one of those... you know, the square, the rectangular shaped one. That thing is so cool.
Yeah, I love
You just admit from like the 50s. Mm.
I love
that thing.
Our very first KMOX studio was in Kirkwood.
No.
In Kirkwood, Missouri, 1925.
Since we have the horse person in here, I'm going to go back to horses for a second.
Okay.
We had a texter earlier today who said there is a horse named John Hancock that might be in the Kentucky Derby. Is that true?
That is true.
So what? Tell us about John Hancock.
I don't know a lot about him yet. I haven't started doing my full homework on the Derby, but I did see that he's has enough points right now to be in the race, and that would be exciting around here.
It would be.
I would have to do something with it.
I'd put a little money on the ponies. I'd put it on John Hancock to win. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah. I think that's a great
idea. He's one of the favorites right now.
You know, Fred Bottomer is the health and religion editor.
He is.
I think Scott should be like reporter and horse editor.
Horse editor, yeah.
Do you want to be the horse editor?
I would love to be the horse
editor. Well, first of all, you need to find out where this Derby winner is buried.
Yeah.
Find that out first.
Start digging.
Start digging.
And you need to do your homework on Clydesdales.
We want to know why the Clydesdales had to do their walk around Busch Stadium an hour before opening ceremonies begin.
We have a caller, John, who would like to check in with us. Hello, John. You're on KMOX.
Good morning, folks.
Hi.
I would just like to comment. If you go to any horse farm in the Lexington, Kentucky area, the notable horses are buried with their head, heart, and hooves. Very few are buried whole. One of which is Secretariat, buried at Claiborne Farm in Paris, Kentucky, which is a spoke of Lexington. But the majority of horses, sadly to say, if they don't go to a rescue farm, even off the racetrack, eventually they're going to be cremated.
Oh, that's interesting.
That wow. is true.
You knew that?
I did know that.
Oh, okay.
I did know that.
Well, then why didn't you
but
say
I'm
it?
But I'm glad he called in, and he also, I thought I did, but.
You didn't say that they took the head off.
We didn't hear that.
Well,
I
didn't
known.
Go into all that part. But anyway.
That's like in the Godfather.
I did note his accent. Horses.
Oh, yeah, that's a St. Louis that. Thing. Yeah.
Oh, I know. And the announcer at.
Our governor does that.
The new one?
Yeah, Mike Kehoe.
The announcer at Fairmount Park also did that. Horses. The horses are on the turn. I loved it. It's one of my favorite little idiosyncrasies about the St. Louis accent.
Another horse person has texted into the show.
Oh, man.
In fact, they start their text with horse person here. years ago, a foal could be buried in STL County, not a full grown horse.
How about that?
Uh-huh.
Just a full-grown horse?
Another one says, actually, it's the same person, says, I had two of my horses cremated. It is not cheap.
Well, think of how not. Much it cost to cremate a person. A horse is so much bigger.
I have no
bigger.
Idea how much it costs to cremate a person.
I think it's getting more expensive.
Like everything else. Like
I think inflation.
Eggs yeah. and cremation.
I think it's because it's a racket. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to disparage funeral people, but it's a racket because when you go to buy a coffin... And you've lost someone special, and they're like, oh, but don't you want this really expensive, nice one? Wouldn't they want, you don't want to go cheap. You don't want to go cheap with this person, right? And you're caught.
I
it's
don't
emotional.
Care.
Right. That's
bury
what I mean.
Me with a horse.
So you should bury me like a horse, just my head and
just my
ankles.
Head and my hooves. Hey, so.
That'd be so weird.
Scott Jagow roaming St. Louis. What's three good things? Do we know yet?
Well, it might be something about horses now. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Might as well.
I may investigate that. Or maybe baseball.
Ooh, yeah, oh. Because opening day happened.
Yes.
And then they gave us a day off.
It's an embarrassment of riches for
Do
you.
Do you know what this is like, to have opening day and then a day off? It's like, I'll tell you what it's like. The opening kickoff in the NFL that goes through the end zone. So they kick the ball off, and then it's like, all right, let's stop again because of it's. There's no nobody carries it out and tries to run with it. That's what it feels like. You start the game, and now stop it immediately.
Is there anyone that is agreeing with him?
Not
yeah.
yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was one person here.
Is it
a texter? No, a texter in all caps. No buffer day, crazy, stupid, insane, ridiculous, and 6 exclamation points. I agree. Scott Jagow.
Horse
this weekend,
editor.
Sunday.
Yeah. Sunday morning, 6:30 to 9:30.
Well, it's time for you to vote in our Mott's Madness tournament. We are at the Sweet 16 now, so you need to get out there and do it. Are you excited?
I am
we
thrilled.
Had...
I love it. And here's the thing, Ronch.
Mm-hmm.
If people aren't happy with this, who do they have to blame?
Themselves.
That's right.
So Union Loafers ended up winning yesterday. Is that correct?
Wait.
I thought they lost in the runoff. Did
I
they?
I thought they lost in the runoff.
I don't know. Oh man. Gosh. Maybe Matt Pajeski screwed up.
He
oh,
probably
boy.
Did. I'm like, that Matt. Don't give it to Matt. Union Loafers lost to That's a Nice a Pizza.
Yeah.
60%
yeah,
voted
you really
for
screwed
That's
up
a Nice
here.
A Pizza.
Oh, yep.
Boy. Now what do we do?
So we have two number one seeds that have been eliminated. Katie's Pizza and Pasta was defeated by Vito's. And That's a Nice a Pizza beat Union Loafers. So we have our Sweet 16 ready to go. It's time for you to go and vote at Chris Amy KMOX on Twitter. And you'll get matchups like Emo's versus Racanelli's.
We
that
gotta,
is a 1-5
yeah,
seed.
But we got to figure this out.
What?
Because Union Loafers is in there.
I will take it down and add the correct one.
Yeah, he screwed up.
First screw up in 3 years. Not bad.
And La Pizza, Ronch. So you kept saying La Pizza was in Clayton. It's in U City.
Yeah.
It's La not
Pizza?
In the loop. It's not in the loop.
It's La on
Pizza.
Delmar.
It's on Delmar. Yeah.
So La Pizza is going up against Pizzeria de Gloria. Mm-hmm. We have the That's a Nice a Pizza versus Fortell's. Filoni's faces Olive and Oak. Dewey's is one of our one seeds remaining.
Dewey's
we have two
good.
Of them left, and this one is going. Dewey's is facing Antonino's on the Hill. Apparently, people really do like Cyberg's Pizza because they are facing Alfonso's.
Wow,
we're gonna have an Alfonso's controversy possibly.
Well,
if Seibergs doesn't win this matchup, because we don't know which Alfonso's it is.
I know.
There are two in Illinois. They are not related. So we don't know which one people are voting for.
One of them has stolen valor, probably.
Yeah.
Or they have an unfair advantage because it's kind of like the two maybe like lower vote getters. Well, when you pool their votes, they're suddenly the top.
That's right. So we have a controversy brewing. Nick and Elena's takes on hot pizza, cold beer, and Vito's faces Uncle Leo's. That is our Sweet 16 in the Mott's Madness Tournament, which is live and ready to go
ready to go.
Chris Amy KMOX. So follow us on Twitter and do it, okay? Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji. As Amy mentioned, the whole signal gate, it's another gate, Amy. They're calling it Signal Gate as apparently, I don't know if you'd call them war plans, but some classified stuff was shared on a platform that was not supposed to be shared. We will talk to Mark Hertling, retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General. He will tell us his thoughts next on KMOX. It's Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji until 12 o'clock today. Then the Gas House Gang takes over. We'll talk about the Cardinals opening day win yesterday. That will happen with Mike Claiborne, and Matt Pauly is going to join me as well, starting again at 12 o'clock. Time to go to the guest line today, and we visit with a friend of the show, St. Louis native, a CBC graduate. We've got Mark Hertling, retired United States Army Lieutenant General, with us here on KMOX. How's it going, General?
Chris, it's going great, and I got to tell you that even the intro music was super. I didn't ask for that, but just tuned in as you were playing Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, which is one of my all-time favorite songs from the 70s.
Oh, man,
I believe
awesome.
It was intentional.
Yeah, I think it was. It was my walk-in music, or walk-up music, I guess.
That's right.
Oh, speaking of that, Cardinals baseball officially started, and opening day yesterday. Are you going to make it to St. Louis sometime this season?
You know, I'm hoping to do that, Amy, and my wife and I did stop everything. I came home from work and watched the game here on the East Coast, and it was phenomenal. I think it portends a great season, and I've been squashed when I've said that before, but this time I think there's a chemistry on this team that seems to be pretty good.
Well, we hope you're right, because a good Cardinal season is clearly great for the city.
Yeah.
It's great for us, my fandom. We would love for them to do well. So let's talk about what we discovered this week with those messages that were sent over Signal, talking about. I mean, you can call them war plans or not call them war plans. I guess we could start there. Is that what it was, and how bad of a thing is it that these things were shared and accidentally given to a reporter?
I'll start off by saying, Chris, first of all, way to segue from a happy place and watching the Cardinals to the craziness of our...
We can't do too much happiness, Mark. We just can't.
Yeah. But what I'll say is, no, they were not war plans. And I said that from the very beginning. I was asked by a bunch of media folks to comment on war plans. And I need to start with the fact that one of my jobs in the Army, when I was a young one-star general, my only tour in the Pentagon, I was the keeper of our nation's war plans. It was part of my role on the joint staff as the J7, was to keep the X number of war plans, and I can't tell you how many there were because that's classified in itself. But a war plan can go from anywhere from 100 pages to 1,000 pages long. There's different annexes. They're all on computers now and on top secret formats in a secure format. And not to get too geeky on it, but when I saw the headline of the original article of passing war plans, I said, there's no way you can do that on a Signal app. First of all, because you can't transfer a classified document onto an unclassified system. And I can really go deep into why you can't do that, but it's impossible to do it because you can't pull things off of secret networks that the Pentagon has. But when the second day came up and you saw the timing and the ordnance that the aircraft were going to deliver and the integration of other types of methods like UAVs or drones, It was exactly what I suggested it was on Morning Joe on Tuesday. I think it was Wednesday morning when I said what they probably passed was a joint naval air attack plan, which is part of the war plan, but it's a very small part. It's sort of like an Excel spreadsheet that gives the integration of all kinds of forces to execute an attack and to accomplish a specific mission. And that's sort of what it turned out to be. So, these are highly classified, especially if they're released before an attack takes place, which is what it seems was done on this case. They were released about an hour or two before the actual attack started as an information flow with some key members of the intelligence community. And we can go into some other things, but the last thing I'd like to say on this is any kind of information that's passed within government, and most people don't know this, is subject to something called either the Records Act or the Presidential Records Act. Everything that's passed in a written document or on email or in some kind of secret messaging network is kept in an archive. And it's for the history of the presidency. It's for going back and looking at things we did right and wrong. But it's a law that you have to keep that. And the very fact that some of this stuff, conversation between many members of the national security establishment, was put on Signals, which, by the way, I use as well on my personal iPhone, is just telling of the hubris and the incompetence of the people that were doing it, because they had it set for disappearance within 4 weeks, as you can do on Signal. You can set disappearance of messages anywhere from the minute the person reads it to 4 or 5 weeks away. And that tells me they were attempting to hide the conversation that they were having between the different players.
Yeah, I did see that a judge recently ordered the government to preserve those Signal messages because, as you said, they're set to delete in 4 weeks. Going back to what you said about the war plans, not to get caught up in it, these weren't the war plans themselves, because like you said, it couldn't be a direct transfer from classified to unclassified and with that volume. Is it fair to say that it was either a select transcription of or a conversation about classified war plans?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Or at least about a specific part of a attack plan. And interestingly enough, Amy, I'll go into military geekiness again and say, you know, when you plan something, it one day turns into an order or an execute mission, or, you know, here's what you have to do. So a plan has all kinds of assumptions and it's a broad picture of what you want to do. But when someone says go, it then turns into an order and with a mission statement. And here's how you're going to execute it. And here are the things that are going to occur. And this is the effect we want to have. So a plan is, you know, sort of a concept of what you want to do, but then when it's turned into action, it becomes a mission or an order. And that's what was happening during the time of this attack on Yemen.
So
that makes sense. I'm sorry. I'm kind of really getting into the weeds.
No, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. What I'm wondering is, doing it the way they did it, could that have put American lives at risk? Because I yes. know that that there were some people in Congress who said that yes.
Chris, emphatically yes. And here's why. You know, there are a lot of people who are unfamiliar with the ability to hack into government systems or listen to what we call signals intelligence or SIGINT. But that is a capability that every major government in the world has. And because someone says, well, wait a minute, Signals is an encrypted app. Yeah, it may be encrypted for the normal person, but you take our National Security Administration in the United States or some of the spy agencies in places like Russia or Iran or China or any other dozens of countries, they have the ability to tap into these things. And truthfully, they are listening all the time. And that's why the government employees and the military personnel are told emphatically, do not use commercial applications like Signal for government or military business. There's actually policy letters in the Pentagon saying you can't talk about these kinds of operations on an open network because there are eyes listening. When I used to travel around the world as the commander of U.S. forces in Europe, there were certain countries I wouldn't even take my government computer or my government phone into because of the capability of those countries to hack into something just when it's in your hotel room. So I was told emphatically, hey boss, by my communication team, hey boss, you don't want to take your computer on this trip. And those are the kind of things happening. So when you're talking about sending out signals on any kind of private or public application like Signals, you're opening yourself up to be hacked and intelligence of the United States to be found by others. And what's interesting about this, Chris, to go one step further, you know, there's a lot of hubbub about this particular action regarding the attack in Yemen. My biggest concern is what other messaging have been going on in the U.S. government? If you've got all of these major players from the SecDef to the NSA to the Secretary of State to envoys to Russia, what other things have they been talking about on this commercial application? And it seems like it's been a lot that would fall into the hands of our enemies and harm not just American military people, but also American civilians from a security perspective.
General, what is the significance, if any, of J.D. Vance, the vice president, expressing to what could be like a third of Trump's cabinet members that he doesn't think Trump understood what he was doing as far as the message that this attack would send and that he doesn't understand the ramifications of it? Would that be normal to have that type of conversation without the president present? Did you see much significance in that?
Yeah, Amy, you know, we could spend about an hour and a half talking about all the things that were significant in this exchange. Yes, that was certainly one of them. Another one was when the vice president called our European allies mm-hmm. all pathetic. He called them freeloaders. And there are 49 different countries in Europe. So is he calling all of those 49 countries freeloader? And then Secretary Hegseth came back and said, yeah, they're all pathetic. That's the kind of stuff that doesn't do much for your diplomacy, you know, I mean, to put it bluntly. But, you know, when you're talking about it, it's interesting that this whole concept was called the PC Houthi chat. Mm. Now, PC stands for Primary Committee. And in the National Security Council, which Michael Gates runs, he schedules primary committee meetings. I say council, I'm sorry, it's primary committee meetings. And those are all the principles of the government. And these principles come together in these principal committee meetings. And they discuss things very openly in a very classified environment, usually in the sit room of the White House. If you're doing that over a Signals app, you can have people typing in their thoughts, but it's not getting to the primary, who is the decision maker, and that's the president. So, you know, these kind of things go on in any government where when you sit down with all of these key players, they express their opinions and they tell people what they think. So when Vance is saying something like that without the president being present, it tells me a lot about the way they're coordinating actions in the government, especially over a Signals app.
Yeah, there were so many concerns coming out of this leak to Jeffrey Goldberg, or including Jeffrey Goldberg in the message. And I guess, what are your thoughts on how Goldberg handled this as a journalist?
I don't know. That could be the topic of another hour and a half seminar. But what he did was he was reporting on something he had heard, mm-hmm. which is what journalists do across the board. I thought he was very principled in not saying the specifics of what he had been given until he was taunted into doing that by people saying, oh, he didn't hear anything and it wasn't a war plan and there was no confidential documents leaked and all that other stuff. So he said, okay, I'll show you what I got. And he did that. And I think when you talk about after the fact, after the assaulted or the attack had been conducted, for him to release that, yeah, it's still classified documents or sensitive documents, I'd say, being released to the public, but it was occurring afterwards and it proved a point. Yeah, this is dangerous stuff that people are just kind of tossing around with a whole lot of hubris and not an understanding of the implications of speaking about these things.
Retired Lieutenant General Mark Hertling is with us here on KMOX. So there is a meeting or a trip J.D. Vance is on in Greenland. And we've heard a lot about that. We've heard a lot about that country and, you know, the United States trying to buy it or whatever. Not sure how serious that is. But why is Greenland, from a security standpoint, important to us?
Well, first of all, there's a couple of U.S. military bases on Greenland. And in the old days, when transatlantic flight was not as effective or efficient as it is today, there would often be aircraft landing there. It also is a major listening post for submarine activities in the Arctic, which provide routes into the northern territories. And, you know, it is an important element of a security alliance of NATO because it does belong to one of the NATO countries. Truthfully, Chris, I can't answer your question. I don't understand why there is suddenly this grand vision of the U.S. occupying Greenland. If anyone has ever flown over Greenland, which I have, other than the capital city of Nuuk, which has about, I think it has a population of 20,000 people, it's just a giant snowbank from east to west. I mean, it's a huge it's a huge parcel of land, but it's covered by ice and rocks and snow. So I don't understand it because one of our NATO allies actually is connected to that parcel of land. And I don't see I don't have the understanding or maybe the strategic vision that some of the people in government have that think that we ought to own it. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, we need to talk to you more often. I've got more questions as well. Just even with tariffs and the damage or potential damage we're doing to allies, and I know you understand the significance and importance of relationships with allies more than anyone else.
I think I do, Amy, not more than anyone else, but I have, having spent, you know, 14 years of a 38-year career overseas, I understand, especially our European allies, to a lesser degree, our allies and partners in the Middle East, and even some in the Indo-Pacific region, like South Korea and Japan and the Philippines. But one of the things I'd say is, I think it was, I'm going to quote Churchill on you, and I think he said, the only thing worse than having a lot of allies is not having a lot of allies.
Yeah.
You know, and it's true, because alliances can be tough. They take a lot of work to keep strong, but once you've got them, they're by your side. Not a lot of people know this, but when we were fighting in Afghanistan, one-third of our force in Afghanistan was called ISAF. That stands for the International Security Assistance Force. One-third of that force, the majority of them came from Europe, from NATO countries like Germany and Brussels and Belgium and the Netherlands and the Baltic countries. And even some are non-NATO partners like Ukraine and Georgia in Europe. So they spent a great deal of national treasure, and a lot of soldiers from those countries were killed in action fighting for the things that we were fighting for right alongside of us. It would have been a whole lot tougher pull to do that without our allies.
Retired United States Army Lieutenant General Mark Hertling, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for visiting with us again.
Chris and Amy, it's always a pleasure to be with you. But unfortunately, we geared away from the Cardinals and into uncharted territory.
We'll get back to it.
Sometimes get back to the Cardinals. Okay?
Well, next time we'll talk birds.
Okay. All right. Great, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That is Mark Hertling with us on the Chris and Amy Show, 104.1 FM KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Well, bad news for these two sleazoids that I work with.
Me? Well, and who's the other one?
Matt.
Oh, he is a real sleazebag.
Hooters is getting rid of one of its most famous nights, and that would be Bikini Night.
Oh,
it's
come
getting,
on, man.
Hooters is getting rid of Bikini Night. I think I'm having a stroke. A Bikini Night in order to focus on its, quote, family-friendly roots.
Wait, hold on a second. I thought Hooters was going away altogether.
Well, they're closing their underperforming stores.
I thought they were completely closing.
Apparently, they're getting rid of its most famous tradition in an attempt to avoid bankruptcy. And I just want to say, how does getting rid of Bikini Night avoid bankruptcy?
I feel like it hastens it.
But, well, you know, he's a sleazebag. Everybody knows that.
We were not doing great.
Let's get rid of the naked ladies.
And we got rid of the one thing everybody does like. I didn't even know they did it.
Apparently,
they have a bikini night?
They have bikini nights.
They have more than one.
Yes.
It's like their Super Bowl.
Their theme nights. No, like string bikini nights. And they basically, the owner says, see, you go to some parts of the country and people say, oh, I could never go to Hooters. My wife would kill me. That's depressing to us. We want to change that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Now she's going to want to go. Come on, man.
That's depressing to us. What did you think? You have bikini nights. Like, was Hooters family friendly?
Sure.
When I was a little
kid,
why not? They had bikini nights. And when I was a little kid, the girls wore short shorts. I don't understand.
You know what, Amy? You need to call this guy and give him your 2 cents. What if you're the person who saves Hooters with your ideas?
When I first joined Charlie Brennan, I was going to see if I could get a job at Hooters because I'm not your Hooters girl, probably that you think of. And I thought it would be funny, just like when Elaine couldn't get the job at the restaurant.
Well, because he was hiring all of his
daughters who happened to be well endowed. I wanted to do a version of that to see if I could get hired at Hooters.
I think you should apply anyway, just to see what happens.
Who does?
All right, let's start that campaign.
Over 40 only.
Amy Marks Kors applies to Hooters. Final hour of the show is coming up in City SC with a Sunday afternoon game happening this weekend. And then there's actually a doubleheader going on there. City 2 will play. We're going to talk to the Academy Director and color commentator on Y98 for City SC. Dale Schilly is next.